Joseph.
Welcome to the Wicked Radio Network.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Angela's Awesome Podcast. Here we are again in the studio.
Yeah, back for the attack. Oh, wait, I got a song for you.
Oh, good.
We can talk while we...
back to the studio, Monkey Tongue Productions. Here we are in Haley, Idaho, coming at you with some awesome tips to have your life be more awesome. Yeah. And Hanno has a song for us.
Well, maybe. I don't
maybe.
Know. Here we go.
We'll see. Everybody wait, drum roll.
Oh, don't you love the anticipation? Yeah, because Angela's back. She walked in. She's like, I feel great.
I do feel great. Here we are. We're in the studio. Where's my song? Oh, yeah.
As soon as you walked in, you said, I felt great.
Oh, yeah. Woo, I love it. You know I love it. And you are too funny. That's just what came to mind, huh?
As soon as you walked in, you're like, I was like,
I feel great.
Like, I'm like pouring my coffee and I'm going, I made it through the wilderness. That's how you sounded. Like,
I do.
You
I
made
am.
It through.
It has been like that.
It was, I mean, you know, Skyping with you last week and, you know, you got the ice packs going.
Oh, I know.
And everything about your, you know, what you talked about last week was about, I'm going to do this. I'm going to get through this.
Right.
And hey, everybody, look where we're at.
Here we are. We're back in the studio. Hannah's going to fix my microphone because I haven't done a very good job about fixing it. Okay. Perfect. Thank you. So we have some exciting things to talk about today, but I think Hanno has a few things he wants to check in about.
Thank you.
First of all, it's the Hanno portion.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I appreciate my little portion.
I know you do.
One thing I got to be on The Crazy Life last night again. Please, everyone, if you're not listening to The Crazy Life, listen to The Crazy Life. If you like our show, we have a lot of crossover with Brian and Jen. And I shared this on there last night. Because the last time I was on there, we were talking about the album, where I'm at, this kind of stuff. And it ties in with what I've been talking about here about taking care of some money stuff, clearing out some clutter, making some room. And I'm happy to say that I have gotten rid of so much stuff. I've paid off a bunch of dental bills. I've paid off a bunch of things. And I just I've had that sense of relief come back where this is what I realized is my visions, you know, we did the visioning for 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, and some of the visions in there were I guess you'd call them financially based, you know, as far as like buying a condo in Maui, you know, way off, you know, things that I'd love to be able to do. They were gone. And they were gone. Because I'm just going, I'm trying to make it paycheck to paycheck, and I know this is going to take me a year, whatever it is, to you know, pay all this stuff off. And it was like, it cut off my hope in a way, which that was just a sucky place to go. But as we've talked about, sometimes you need to find a little bottom, a little motivation. And, you know, two, three weeks ago, I started the process and eBayed the heck out of stuff.
Wow.
Yeah. And sold. What was crazy is
it's amazing. You've sold everything that you wanted to sell.
Here's the other thing is I sold stuff that I had put up there months ago. It was like one of these weird things where like all of a sudden it was like the stars aligned. And not only did I get rid of the stuff that I put up just in the last 2 weeks, but like yesterday too, I was all of a sudden I get a message on my phone saying, you know, the blah, blah, blah sold. And I was just like, whoa, that's been up there for like a year, you know, because it was priced really high. It was one of those things where it's only if somebody really wants this thing would they buy it because, you know, it's special, whatever. So, but yeah, even that stuff. So a whole bunch of things happened and I sold some things for some friends and that felt good too, to be able to say here, you know, for, it was something that Danny had bought. They lost the receipt, you know, it was a camera and I sold that for Aaron and I was able to go give him some money yesterday and say, hey, here you go, you know,
cool.
And so that felt really good. So yeah, that's my
laws of attraction.
Update.
I like it.
You know what? You're right. That's what it felt like. It felt like laws of attraction was happening.
Yeah.
You know,
I got all lined up.
Yeah. And I took care of myself. You know, I upgraded some things in the studio that need to be upgraded. So now I don't have to worry about it for another 5 years because some things were getting obsolete. And I bought some things for myself for fun and musically, you know, and then the rest of it went to paid some bills. And, cool. And I booked everything to go to Chicago next March.
Oh, and that's the podcast thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, I was up till like Brian and I chatted. We podcasted. This is going to be my fourth and fifth pod because we're going to do a doubleheader today. These are going to be my fourth and fifth podcast this week.
Wow. Tomorrow, you're a podcasting crazy person.
Yeah, I used to be the pod whore, but now I'm calling myself the pod warrior.
I like that way better. The pod warrior. I am the warrior.
Oh, that's even, because I was singing Dokken, you know, pod warrior. I'm going to pod some more. That's what it was. Dokken. Oh, yeah, how hilarious is that? But
that's the difference between our music tastes.
Oh, yeah, big time. Yeah, you're like,
I'm all about Scandal.
I love that song, though. Scandal's the best. We might have to close with that today.
Okay, let's
that's
do
the
it.
Best. I love that. I'd like to cover that, you know.
Actually, you should.
I really should. Yeah. Yeah. I've been thinking, I actually have it on my phone. When I was in Maui last year, I thought about Scandal.
Wow.
And I was like, that would be great to cover because not too many people even know who Scandal is anymore.
Oh, I know.
You know,
I know.
Of our generation.
On the 80s list at the gym when I play the game, who knows who sings what? People never get that one.
Yeah.
Well, they kind of do now because
the
I
other
played
one isn't
it,
isn't it like Rockwell? That's the other one that nobody ever gets. Nobody ever gets Rockwell. Yeah.
I always feel like somebody's. That was a perfect one for next week. That's Halloween.
Oh, perfect. Yeah.
I know, right?
Yeah. Okay. So then, what was I saying? Oh yeah, so I booked all. Oh yeah, I was up with Brian. We did the Crazy Life, and then we just talked to like it was seriously 1 a.m.
Oh
and
my
he's
god,
on East Coast
heaven!
Time,
I can't even. You know? Oh my gosh!
But the great part was we just shot the beep and all of a sudden it was 1, and because he's one of the people I'm looking forward to meeting when I go to you know him and Tony and Jeannie and well there's just a ton of people but so I bought my it was great to you know get my trip all set up for March. And we talked a little bit about that too. I'm starting to realize how I used to go home every March and it kind of hit me last night that one of the reasons I go home, because we were talking about moments of joy. And one of the reasons I go home is because I'm getting the joy of the past, right? A certain cooked meal, hanging out with old friends, this kind of stuff. It's that, you know, that satisfying it always makes us feel good if we have a place where, you know, that's like a happy place. But I realize that I'm really into creating new joy right now in my life.
Yeah.
And good. Portland really made that clear to me is because, you know, there's going to be a day where my mom and dad aren't going to be in that house anymore. And they're, you know, and it's time for me to create. That's one of the reasons I came to Idaho. It's like, I needed to leave that life and create my new life.
Right.
And I do have a new life with Sharon and my puppies and, you know, podcasting with you and, you know, all this stuff. And I want to create these new memories and make these new connections for the next 10, 15 years. Cause it's so easy to, I grew up in a great neighborhood. I really did. You know, I had a great upbringing and it's so easy to go back to that as like a sense of comfort. And in some ways, I want to create new, you know, this is my home now.
Yeah.
So
I would think so.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool that you're like spending time thinking about your vision for your future.
Yeah. And that's, I think
it's important.
Yeah. That's kind of part of it too, is like, okay, where am I? You know, I can always go back there.
Totally.
But
well, you don't have, it's not an either or situation.
Exactly. So, you're right. It's an and.
Right. It's an and. Yeah. And I mean, I'm always in favor of looking at, you know, taking time to think about the direction your life is going and where your priorities. I mean, hello, we talk about that all the time here. Like where your priorities are, where you're putting your energy, what's important, what do you want your life to look like? These things are all super important. So that's great.
Yeah.
And you really loved doing the Portland thing. So that was cool that you're doing that again.
And it's not a judgment on there. It's like,
no, of course not.
And I'm going to call some friends and say, hey, I'm not coming back to California this March, you know, and I'll catch up. We'll catch up when I can. This year, I'm going to do something different.
Yeah.
And that's that, you know, it's no big deal. And I got one last thing. I just want to get
here. Here it comes.
By the way, I printed out a copy for you. So
good.
This just goes back to that eating for pleasure versus necessity.
Ooh.
And I'm not going to go into all the details. It's really, really deep.
But pulling out a picture of the brain, everybody.
But this, I will post this article. It's called Psychology and Appetite. So a little background. There's been between Crazy Life Podcast and our podcast, we talk a lot about, you know, this idea of eating for pleasure, eating for necessity. And Dev and I had a little back and forth on Twitter about that. And Dev, without getting, I don't want to misspeak for him. I'd rather have him come on and make his case. But
as we all know, Dev can definitely do.
Yeah, he can lay it out there. But he was kind of talking about this idea that human beings, as when we were, you know, quote unquote, evolving, or, you know, on this planet, that we ate out of necessity, and that these ideas of pleasure kind of came about as we developed our culture, farming, you know, that's where we started eating for more pleasure. Whereas before it was, you know, out of need. And I tapped into another, our Twitter archaeologist. He's an archaeologist. His name is Tristan. Great accent, by the way.
Oh, okay, good.
It's this kind of Scottish German blend that's just like, okay, I mean, it just makes me go, ooh, you know, like,
oh, you know.
But Tristan's
having a heart attack right now.
Yeah, well, no. And Tristan's, you know, he's got this scientific mind too. It's great. We have great discussions on Twitter all the time. And I threw it out there because I was thinking about the idea that when did we start cooking? Or should I say preparing food?
Right.
You know, that would be an indication of, like, taste and flavor. And Tristan made a good point of, you know, that when man was kind of roaming, they weren't exactly leaving a lot of fossil record behind. Or, you know,
right.
Their camp, or, you know, the record of their camp, their dishes, or whatever the archaeologists look for to show what, you know, to give an insight into their culture, right? So he said, that's a little kind of tough, you know, and his gut reaction is like, well, the reason we have a pleasure sensor is because that's going to give us the highest caloric food, right? So something that's very sweet has a high calorie, you know, has more calories to
right.
it. And that was his kind of thing. But he said, I'm not an evolutionary biologist. And I'm
right.
like, good point. I should probably talk to somebody else, you know,
right.
like, because I don't know these things. So what I did is, real quickly, I contacted a friend of mine who has a couple of, who's been to school for psych degrees, you know, so I figured she probably knows brain stuff.
Right.
And she teaches at a college and university. And she really dumbed it down for me. But her point was, is our pleasure centers in our brain, being the hypothalamus.
The hypothalamus,
yeah,
right?
That pleasure center is there for all different types of pleasures. And we've had that always. It's always been there.
Right.
Whether it's, you know, sex for reproduction, you know, food, that's always been there. And I think Dev was kind of trying to make the point that we've developed the food part of it. And my kind of thing was, is no, I think we've always had it, you know, that we've just kind of put it into overdrive. And so now I'm going to.
Oh,
that
sorry.
Was that's awesome.
that's a text from my friend Heidi.
But I'll so I found this. I found this great article. And now, granted, I'm going to admit to this after, first of all, I want to say thank you to Dev and thank you to Tristan. I learned so much because I did some research.
Right.
And the first thing I did is I ran down this idea of preparing food.
Right.
And I found this cool article where they said that this is just a theory that we were, quote unquote, in the kitchen millions of years ago. Like, and it was really well that our ancient human ancestors may have put us on track towards meals a la Julia Child as long as 1.9 million years ago, according to new evidence that extinct hominids were cooking and processing their food. And this was the idea that we, our species, developed smaller teeth, smaller stomachs from the previous species, Neanderthals, because we learned actually had to cook. So we didn't have to eat, we weren't eating raw meat. So we didn't need to have these giant teeth and these big bellies.
Okay.
Right. The problem with this theory or this idea, for lack of a better term, is that fire, evidence of fire doesn't go back that far.
No.
So that's the only problem with this. But it was an interesting idea that we had actually, you know, that there was a fire somewhere and somehow a piece of meat ended up on that flame. And ancient man went, wow, that smells good. you know, because the deer or whatever it was, and they went and ate it, and they went, this is good, and stuff like that. But it was really, you know, between all that, I didn't really get anywhere. But it was the psychology and appetite thing that really took me in this direction of our pleasure when it comes to food is so complicated. I mean, it is ridiculously complicated. And this one chart on here where it shows, I mean, it's like a maze about how the brain, how it works from one area to the other. But we've got this main center of pleasure in our brains. And it not only connects, it connects taste. There's visual cues. And where I'm going with all this, and I'll get to the point here right now, is basically our food industry has learned to hotwire us and tap into it.
Yeah. You needed to have all this research to get that?
Well, it was interesting to actually read how it, you know, that this is part of us from an evolutionary standpoint. We've always had this, you know.
Yes.
We didn't
because we're built to continue to evolve. And if we didn't find pleasure in sex and eating, we wouldn't be nearly as incentivized to have sex and eat.
Yeah.
That goes
back to the beginning. Like, we didn't evolve that as Homo sapiens. That didn't develop. We had that. That's her point here, is we've always had that.
Totally. You know? Of course we have. I mean, even animals have that.
Yeah.
Like, they have pleasure in eating, or they have, or the opposite, they have displeasure in being hungry. Right. I mean,
yeah. And that's where they made a great, you know, the hypothalamus, the body's thermostat, the hypothalamus responds to circulating signals of hunger and energy balance. Close to the amygdala and sharing many connections with it, the essential role of the hypothalamus is to keep all things in our bodies equal. The hypothalamus tells us to drink when we are dehydrated, sleep when we are fatigued, to take off our sweater when we're hot, to eat when our bodies are running low on calories, to help us achieve homeostasis. And this latter role of the hypothalamus, excuse me, was essential to our survival when living in hunter-gatherer society. And right. That's what Tristan was kind of talking about. When we're in hunter-gatherer society, we're not leaving a lot of evidence behind. We're moving, right? We're nomadic, right? But perpetually on the brink of starvation and never knowing when the next meal, usually vegetable matter and only occasionally lean meat, would be available. In an environment where malnutrition posed a constant threat for infertility and death, we therefore evolved a predisposition to be in a constant calorie-seeking overdrive and to derive an excessive amount of pleasure from eating foods rich in calories and fat. As if this weren't enough, we also developed an incredibly efficient mechanism of laying down any excess calories consumed at one time as fat, to use at a later time when food was again scarce.
Right.
That's how, you know, we put the fat stores in our bodies and blah, blah, blah. And then this goes on and on with some more details. But what it ends with is that, and this kind of where it ties into what Dev was talking about, is, you know, it goes into, you know, what underpins pleasure. It, you know, it talks about hormones that are released when we are in rewarding activities. My friend Dolores said, this is one of the reasons why people sometimes get hungry after sex, because we're firing off that part of our brain.
Right.
And it's just saying, now go get some food, you know,
right.
Go get a sandwich. But basically what she goes on to say is that in our contemporary world, environmental cues that influence food intake are becoming increasingly more powerful. Why fewer and fewer of us are able to maintain a healthy relationship with food is among one of the most difficult questions in science today. Trying to understand how and why the obesity epidemic has occurred requires collaborative psychological, medical, and neuroscientific research, in addition to insights from professionals in social and clinical psychology, economics, and public health policy. And then it just goes into about learned cues are initially arbitrary from the environment, but that, you know, through reward and punishment, but that we're getting food predictive cues are being delivered to us. And she makes the case that even visually now we've been hotwired.
Well, of course.
And it's amazing to think about what blows me away about this article is the fact that, so this is what it's going to take to get us out of this. Physiological, medical, neuroscientific, social, clinical, psychology, economics, public health. I mean, that's a lot of factors. It's as complex as our brain is. You know,
well,
it's like
somewhat. I mean, yes,
but you know
it's
what
complex.
I mean? Like,
Yes, I agree.
Like the, everything that went into everything that they've learned to basically tweak us, you know, all these parts of our brain, they use how they, the how much sweetness is, do we taste? How much fat is there that sits on our tongue? What does it look like? What's the message in the wording? All this kind of stuff. They've spent billions of dollars on this. Yes. Over all these years. And we're going to literally have to spend billions of dollars to understand it and figure out how we can reverse it.
Or we can just practice practical strategies and...
Which is why we're here.
Take a leap of faith that, yeah, by doing things, getting back, all the things we talk about, getting back, eating slow, getting back to natural eating rhythms, eat more from the feminine, things that are closer to nature instead of things that are manufactured in a lab. Slow down. Start listening to natural biocircadian rhythms as far as sleeping when we're supposed to be sleeping, awake when we're supposed to be awake. I mean, yes, I agree. It may take billions of dollars to like scientifically explain that, but
think about it. But how do we get this word out to people? All right, so you
one
and
podcast
I are,
at a time.
Well, that's it. You know, like that, because some people don't have access to this technology. They're being bombarded by the other guys. How do the quote unquote
gifts
good
of
guys,
the gifts of desperation, the gifts of illness, the gifts of obesity, the gifts of having adrenal burnout, the gifts of depression. These things, if you're willing to look at the other sides of it, yes, go to a doctor, yes, do the physical thing, but be aware that when you go to a physician, odds are extremely high that they're just going to give you some medication. Start looking for natural practitioners. Start looking for natural medicine doctors. Start looking for people that use more natural approaches, and then start looking at your life. Where have I completely been hijacked by my lifestyle?
Yeah.
That's what we're talking. I mean, this is awesome. That's what we talk about all the time.
Yeah.
Like, none of this surprises me. I mean, it's, yes, we have been hijacked by the food industry.
Yeah.
And it is all about money. And it's the same thing with our politics, because who do you think is electing the people that are making the decisions about if we have to have GMOs written on the labels, if we need to do this and that and this
the
and that.
Real simple
they do
one,
not have our health
the
as
daily,
their number one.
Yeah. Otherwise, we'd have
concern.
The actual recommended daily allowance of sugar on a label. And we don't.
Totally.
And the reason we
don't,
is because the rest of the world is doing it, but the United States isn't, is because of the influence of that industry on our representatives.
It comes down to money.
And until we stand up and tell our representatives, no, this is on us.
Well, you can do that, and you can stop buying the
that's
things
Start,
that
yeah.
aren't doing this.
Yeah,
that's,
exactly.
That's the big thing. You go to the store, you decide, I'm not buying anything that has GMOs in it. I'm actively going to buy things that are healthier. I'm going to support local organic farmers.
Yep, like our friend Jeannie talks about.
Exactly.
She's like, I'm going to the farmer's market.
But it's more expensive, so you have to decide what if it matters to you.
Yeah, and
how do we decide that? We don't often decide it because it's a great idea. Some people do. Most of us decide to do that because we have depression. We have anxiety. We have sleep issues. We have headaches. We have, fatigue. That's why all of these things that are happening to us are a huge fat gift, because it gets our attention. And we're definitely not, most of us don't do it just because it's a great idea. But it's going to take the grassroots effort and people talking about, and I think the other way that people get the message is that you, when you live it, it's just like with our program, it's a program of attraction rather than necessarily promotion.
Yeah.
You and I are talking about this stuff. We actually are practicing it. Are we doing it perfectly? No, but we are one step at a time doing as much as we can to evolve and grow. And that's the difference.
Yeah.
Like, that's the difference between our ancestors, which were eating because they had to. They would have eaten for pleasure more often if it would have been easier to eat.
Well, and like this was showing,
right?
is that actually, you know, if they're looking for evidence now going back a million years that people were actually preparing their food, they were doing cooking.
Right.
That means this goes back that far. That's why I just got to say once again, thank you, Dev, because you helped me learn so much. And I told him eventually, I said, you know, we're both right in this. Neither one of us is wrong. It's like, yes, we had this going back a million years, but we have also developed aspects of it. And that was his kind of a thing, was that we have kind of developed and or evolved. But what one of the real things is that he was talking about in the last 50 to 100 years we've had, and we don't evolve in this as a species. We don't evolve in periods of hundreds of it's we evolve in periods of tens of thousands of years. However, we have developed things. And that's where Dev was right on. Like in the last 50 to 100 years, we've developed a need for these, you know, these sugars and these products and these images. And
because we've gotten out of touch with natural rhythms. Yeah. We've started working more. Now people work so much. They need pleasure, more pleasure from other things. We need more screen time. We're not connecting with each other. I mean, and we used to evolve much slower. That's not happening now. With the technology that we have going on now, I listened to a talk by David Pond, who's an awesome astrologer, a couple of years ago, and he was talking about like the way that we're reinventing and creating things now. We have things, we have new things coming out like hundreds of times faster than we did even a decade ago. Like we are constantly evolving and changing and having all these, you know, new and improved ways to live. And some of it's really awesome. Like they can put a different, they can put a heart in you and save your life. You know, they can do a liver transplant from another person and save your life. These things are amazing. But at the same time, we also could not leave the house ever. Because of Amazon,
you know,
which is
actually,
necessarily as great.
I
want
to say something that's a little bit harsh, but to me, this is a truth as a believer in evolution and Darwin. Is the reality is everybody that right now is overeating and getting diabetes and health problems, they should really be dying and leaving those of us that can actually process. This is, I'm just talking from a human evolutionary standpoint.
And people definitely believe that.
Yeah, that the people, and I don't want this to happen. I want everyone to be healthy. But if we were to go back to where we didn't have the medicine, we didn't have the things, the people today that should be surviving are the ones whose bodies are like mine and are high metabolism and can exist in this world of breakneck speed with hypercaloric foods. And
I can't wait to hear the tweets on this.
I honestly, I don't believe that, and I don't want that. I want it to be the other way, but that's unfortunately that's kind of a harsh reality, and that sucks.
Right.
I mean, that really sucks. That's where our food industry says these are the people that we want to survive, and these are the people that we don't.
They don't care about that. They want people to buy whatever because it's the bottom line is money. It doesn't come down to people's well-being. Most food manufacturers do not have your well-being unless it's an organic, locally grown something. Chances are that they're answering, and it's not even necessarily the they're answering to a board. There's numbers involved. There's money involved.
You're right.
That's why we have to take it upon ourselves. And I think in a way that's not a bad thing, that we are being forced to be more proactive about our own health. Like I do not feel like if you want to be a truly healthy person, you can rely on when you get sick, going to your doctor and them telling you what to do to be healthy. You need to be way more proactive about that. You need to find things that work for you. You have to be open to new strategies. You have to take your health seriously. You can't take your health for granted. And a ton of people do. I certainly did until I didn't have it anymore. And then you all of a sudden are like, oh, shoot. And then I started with acupuncture, but then I went to doctors. And they're going to put you on meds. Like if you have a knee replacement or need a new hip or need a new liver, great. Go to see a doctor. But if you have depression and you have anxiety and you have sleep problems, definitely get some help with a functional doctor. But start looking at alternatives because they're just going to give you medications. And again,
that was beautiful.
And again, where's the driver behind the medications? Do you know how much money?
Here we go again to another industry.
It's crazy, but and I think it could be depressing and overwhelming. But I also think that basically what I feel like it is we have gotten to, and this is why we keep talking about thriving. We have finally gotten to a place on this planet. Thank you to the technology. Thank you to the way that things operate now, where we no longer have to be in survival mode. a lot of us still operate from survival mode. And the reason why we operate from survival mode is because we think that we need to have this perfect body. So we operate from survival. I'm not going to be okay if I don't weigh this amount and look this way. We think we need a lot of stuff. I'm not going to be okay unless I have the latest, greatest truck, unless I have the latest, greatest technology, unless I have the latest, best vacation, unless I can spend blah, blah, blah on Christmas presents, whatever. We still are kind of wired with this, like we talked about last week, that scarcity thinking. Like it's just not enough. It's just not enough. We need more. So we're constantly in this survival thing. But the truth is a lot of us have enough to eat. A lot of us have a place to live. A lot of us have a job. And all that extra stuff that we have to have, we need to have this perfect body. We need to have the perfect partner. We need. We don't.
Yeah, it's like this.
And so the next step in our evolution. Step in our evolution is to let go of that survival.
Ooh, you just
and
you
move
know
into oh. thriving.
So you just got you just really. I had a thought in my head, and you just really drove it home. So. Evolution honestly doesn't happen. I mean, real evolution. Like, I mean, our bodies changing doesn't happen in short periods of time.
You know, it
happens in periods of time that are greater than I can even comprehend. Right.
Right.
However, we have outside influences have come in and put aspects of our bodies into hyperdrive. We've created, once again, this, like you said, the scarcity, this, you know, we work so much. So all of a sudden it's like, you know, stress response
all the time,
all the time, cortisol, you know, everything's firing off, but our bodies aren't used to it. We've made this shift that it's going to take thousands of years for our body to adjust to operate at this level. So we're not going to evolve. Our bodies are not going to change to operate efficiently at this level. So what do we need to do? We need to shut off the noise.
Right.
That's what's going to make the difference now. Shutting off the noise is changing that part of it.
And I don't know where this line is. There is a certain line. They've done studies on this where once you have your basic needs met plus a little bit more, anything on top of that is not actually bringing more security to your life. You think it might be, but it doesn't actually. I mean, now when you're on the verge of losing your house, or you are losing your house, or you can't actually feed your kids, that's different. That is different. I'm not talking about that. But if you're at an income level where you can comfortably go to the grocery store, you can comfortably meet all your bills, you may not be going to Hawaii every month, and you may not be going.
What are you saying?
I know, right? You may not, but anything above that doesn't make you happier and doesn't make you feel more secure. Once you have, and I can't remember where that level is, but if you research that, there's definitely studies out there that prove that this is true. But so many of us have those basic needs. But like I was saying before, we are so conditioned to think we need more. And I think part of the why we're here is because this is the next step in our evolution. This is the next step. We can actually go from surviving to thriving. A lot of us, not everyone. I mean, there are still so many people on the planet that are just trying to get their basic needs met, or just trying not to get killed in some crazy war. But here in the United States, and anybody who's on any sort of listening device that can hear this podcast, they're most likely in a
they
space
have their needs met.
Where we can start thinking about thriving. Yeah. And it comes down to all the other tools that we talk about. It comes down to acceptance, gratitude, being present. Because truly, if you can be in your body, in your life, you don't need all these things that you think you need. Yeah. I mean, whenever I start thinking I need more stuff, or I need more vacation, or I need this, I need that, odds are I've been overworking and over pushing and I'm tired. And then I start thinking this, you know, rather, and I've not been present. I haven't, because you know what? I've got the dachshunds in the car. I can go for a walk when we get done podcasting. Like, what else do you really need? Yeah. I mean, you know, you all that are listening, you need a dachshund, obviously, but I mean, it's a matter
needs a new Frenchie.
It's a matter of being, you know, present. Yeah. I think it's a great conversation. I think it's a great, I think that absolutely the food companies have hijacked our taste buds, because if you've ever done this, if you've ever gone from eating a diet of junk food And then you slowly wean yourself into a diet of natural foods like actual fruits, vegetables, potatoes, rice, lean, organic, healthy meats, and you gradually shift there, your taste buds will go back.
They will adjust.
Yeah. And you will find enormous pleasure from eating foods that are so good for you. But it's, you can't go from eating, you know, Fruit Loops every morning and a boxed pizza every night into like a super healthy, you know, well, maybe you could. I mean, I don't know. Is there anything better than local eggs and like a potato,
like a fresh
an organic
strawberry.
Purple potato that you, you know, put together and yeah. then have a fresh organic strawberry afterwards?
Yeah.
I mean, oh my gosh. Seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a blueberry shake yesterday, my protein powder and some maca and frozen blueberries. I swear to God, I felt like I was eating dessert because I haven't had any dessert in so long. I was multitasking while I was having it. Yes. But I didn't get a chance to eat. So I was drinking my shake while I was teaching. And I was like, oh, my God, this is the best thing ever. Like, you don't think that when you're having dessert every night.
No, you know, you wouldn't. Yeah.
And I'm not criticizing if you do, because believe me, I do a lot. But I'm just saying that, you know, yes, they do. And partially hydrogenated oils. Oh, my God. Total hijack.
Yeah.
And they're cheap and they get us addicted and then we keep buying it. And then they probably have a handshake deal with the pharmaceutical company that you're going to have to, that you're then going to have to be on the medication for high cholesterol or, you know, whatever. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. That it's super annoying, but anytime I get super wound up about it, like right now, I just try to remind myself that this is a grassroots effort. This information, we also live in an age where all you have to do is Google healthy eating, healthier lifestyle choices. There's 8 billion bloggers out there talking about strategies, how to get back to it. You just keep looking till you find someone that you really resonate with. And then just like we talk about all the time, you do one little thing. You do one little thing. You change one thing. You don't get overwhelmed and be like, oh my God, I have to change everything. Because
yeah.
then you'll change nothing.
Yeah.
Which is sort of the topic.
And this is
which we do have.
Yeah, we do have. Yeah. And this is something that I do, and this is just my own little thing, is I do write to my representatives.
Well, I think it's great. I think you should.
If we do that, we will. This was shown. John Oliver has done a great job with this on his HBO program, where he brings up something. He did this thing with the FCC, and man, we're talking big money here. We're talking big business money, and his audience wrote letters to the FCC. This was about the fair internet deal. I'm forgetting the terminology on what they called it again, but the open internet thing. It was about where they wanted to basically give preferential speeds to, like, you know, Netflix, but, you know, whoever's got the money can have the faster internet. And there were so many letters that were sent in to the FCC that they had to pay attention.
Cool.
The people came out in droves and
good.
Made a difference, and it changed things. And so when I hear, oh, we can't do anything, there's too much money. No, we can do something if we put our voices together. But it's not going to happen if I say, nope, not me. You know,
right.
Oh, it's not going to make a difference, so I'm not going to do anything.
Right.
I write to my senator here all the time and drive him nuts. I don't care.
Good.
If something comes up, I'm just going to say, hey, you know, I hope that you feel this way because this is how I feel and I'm one of your constituents. You
good.
Know?
So. I think you should do that. And I think anyone who feels called to do that should do that. That's a great form of service. I am all for it. I'm probably never going to write a letter to anybody. But you know what? I will speak for what I believe in when I hit the grocery store. I buy.
And that's the other way.
I buy.
With our pocketbook.
Expensive, grass-fed, lean meats. I buy organic, local groceries. I send money to the Hunger Coalition to help because I feel passionately about that. I don't volunteer for them. I have a job. I'm busy enough. I can't put more stuff on my plate. I write them a check.
Yeah.
And I believe in, and I love those guys because they are really active in, you know, helping people figure out sustainable ways to learn how to feed themselves in a, you know, that they can afford and in a healthy way instead of just handing out, you know, Rice-A-Roni. Or whatever. But I agree with you. I think that any little thing happens. And I think that, I mean, thank God there are people like you that write the letters. And thank God there are people that do the protests. And And, you know, I see the films and I believe in, you know, supporting the other people that do that. I mean, I was talking to one of my clients this week and she was talking about how she's on this board. She doesn't know she's super helpful. It's not really her thing, but they love having, she's an amazing listener. She's a super wicked smart gal. And they just love it because when she does have something, you know, to weigh in, everyone's like, you know, listening. Yeah. And she's like, I stay on it because I really believe in the gal that's running it. And I want to support her.
Yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
Some of us support the people that are writing the letters. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so I think that if you think you can't do anything, I think there's something you can do. But I think you need, it's just like when we've talked about service in the past. We definitely need to pick service that works for us. Like sometimes we need to get out of our comfort zone and do whatever. But just like we talked about at previous podcasts, like sometimes the service doesn't work for us because it makes us more tired. Like I think the last thing anybody needs is something else that's going to make you more overwhelmed and more tired. I think if anything, yeah. we need to do less. Because it's just like the other topic that we love to talk about with the oxygen mask on you first. Like you're going to be of better service if you don't overwhelm yourself. I mean, we all know those people that are like, oh, well, I've got to go this and help this person. And I got to go do that and help this person. And it's like, it may not even come from an energy of martyrdom, but they're exhausted. And you're thinking to yourself, please don't help anybody else. Just help yourself. Right? So it's balancing. I mean, I think it's super important, but definitely, you know, making the decision, even if the decision is something like, okay, being healthier, like trying to work on, you know, getting so I feel better. So the headaches, turn the page on this. I feel like even though that puts a lot of my energy inside on me, I know that in the long term, the strategies that I'm practicing and the strategies that I'm learning, at some point I'm going to be able to help those, pass those on.
Yeah.
Or once I'm a healthier person, I'm going to be better support to my friends, better support to the people at the gym, better support to Rob. So regardless how you slice it, me paying attention to what's going to be best for me is a good idea.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, it's super interesting.
Man, I keep...
I know. I don't know why it keeps going down. I'm trying
not
to...
It's not your fault. It's not your fault.
My little microphone sliding.
That's why the headset's going to be great.
I'm getting a new headset.
You're actually used to a headset. See,
I love a headset.
I'm used to a mic, so I can and you use a headset.
I use a headset all the time.
All right.
Yeah.
Topic. I've killed you this morning.
No, no, you have not killed me, but this is perfect.
Great discussion.
So I wrote a blog last week about my sobriety because I turned 12 on Monday. Thank you. Thank you. It was very exciting. It was very strange this year because I'm a little bit more ambivalent about this birthday than I've ever been. I don't know. I like got kind of teary when I wrote the blog, but and I'm filled with thankfulness. Don't get me wrong, but I'm normally so over the top excited about it. I think it's the parasites. I don't know. It's if there's anything wrong, it's the parasites.
You know, I'm going to start wondering if you're being controlled by little aliens.
I feel like I have been. Anyway, so I put this out there and basically my blog was just talking about, you know, continuing to grow and evolve and how that means everything to me. And it does. It means everything to me. Like I feel like part of my purpose on the planet is just to continue to grow and evolve and learn things. Like it's just super important and I'm super interested. I'm more interested in things that help us on a practical level than if blah, blah, blah happened a million years ago or blah, blah, blah. Like, that's just me. I think it's great when people are interested in that. I grew up with creation, not evolution. So all that stuff I'm still somewhat biased about and just could care less. But
yeah,
I mean, you know, according to the Seventh-day Adventists and the way that I grew up, the planet started 6,000 years ago. So, you know. And I wouldn't argue it either way with anybody because as far as I'm concerned, you can't prove it. So
yeah, tree rings, they prove it.
Yeah, okay.
Here, let me take you out into the woods.
Right. Yeah, there's a million-year-old tree. Okay, we're not going there. Okay, so
no,
here's...
No, but there's actually there are life forms on this planet that they can go out and bring it to you. You can take you right to it and show you that this is... hundreds of or tens of thousands of it basically.
I don't agree, but I think that's great that you agree with that. And I think that's great that that's your point of view. And I totally honor that 1000%. But you take your number one creationist and you take your number one evolution scientist, blah, blah, blah. Those two are not going to agree.
Oh, no, no, yeah.
Because the creationist is not going to believe that the evolutionist can prove it. They're proving it. That's just not true.
Yeah.
To some people. And I'm one of those people. So, and it's not even that I still believe in creation necessarily. I just don't even want to go there because I don't think you can prove it. So, but if you can prove it, that's perfect. Here's the topic. So I wrote this blog, I put it out there, and I got this email from someone, and this is what she said. She said, Angela, I love what you said and that you keep growing. I would like to have your push and energy to move ahead and get better every day. And then she said, it's tricky. And it really resonated with me to get that email because I have felt, I have been the person on that side of the email where I have been like, I felt like, I'm getting inspired by this great health guru, and then I'm like, oh, but I just, you know, I had pizza and ice cream last night. Like, oh, I just can't do it. And you're almost like, wow, this person has it all figured out, and they're constantly growing and evolving and changing and healing, and I'm just too tired to do that. So I wanted to talk about it a little bit today because the truth is for me, and I don't know how it is for other people that do health podcasts and do health blogs and do whatever, but I read a lot of stuff by a lot of people that is really inspiring to me that they kind of say what I'm about ready to say. And that is, I'm not growing and evolving every day. I'm doing the best I can. And some days the best I can is making it to work, eating three meals that are not necessarily as healthy as they could be, watching way too much TV and going to bed. Like some days you're just not going to be growing and evolving and learning how to thrive. Some days you actually are just surviving. And I think it's part of it. And I think when we have that pressure on ourselves to constantly be doing better, to constantly be growing, to constantly be healing, to constantly, you know, some days I swear to God, I have an ice pack on and I'm like, forget it. I'm just going to lay on the couch. I'm going to have an ice pack. I'm going to watch stories on TV, and I'm just going to let it go because it's just too much work to constantly try to be present, to constantly be on it. Some, you know, I go in phases with the vegetables. Some days it's just too much to go to the store and then chop all this stuff up and then clean the kitchen. And that's been like that for me lately. So, the point of this whole conversation shift is I just want to put it out there that, you know, I feel like just being able to do some awesome things sometimes is going to make a huge difference. Like feeling like it has to be great and you have to be improving all the time is a setup that's going to make you feel shame. And my favorite people who write about this are, we've talked about her, Glennon Doyle Melton, who writes the Mom Mastery blog. She talks about this all the time. She's an amazing, inspirational gal. She's an awesome writer. And all the time she talks about how messy life is and how hard it is to just put your shoes on some days. And I love that because it feels so real to me and I can really relate to that. Brené Brown talks about this all the time. She wrote a book called The Gifts of Your Imperfection. She talks about wholehearted living and she doesn't encourage people to continuously be doing more. She talks about being more present. She talks about cutting yourself a break. She talks about looking at your shame and what shames you. She's awesome. It's so powerful to me. Mary O'Malley wrote this book called The Gift of Our Compulsions. Like it's all about, I think one of the most powerful healing tools that you can pull out and use, particularly if you feel like an email like this is resonating with you, is just to cut yourself a break. I think more of us need to be cutting ourselves a break. It's like what we talked about with the switch guy, Dan Heath, that wrote the book Switch, and he talks about what is often thought of as laziness is actually exhaustion in disguise.
Oh, that's interesting.
Right? I mean, I think that that's part of it. I think a lot of us don't need more motivation. We need more inspiration, and we need more rest. The end. No, I'm just kidding. But that's what I feel like, and I wrote a blog about this for this week because and I used baseball as a metaphor because my husband is from New York and he couldn't be happier right now. we don't actually watch the baseball games. We watch a television show and then check in because, and we can't tape it because it will jinx them. But he is, couldn't be more excited right now about his beloved Mets that he can't actually watch very much. So we were talking about baseball metaphors, and basically, you know, we think when we need to grow and evolve, we need to hit a home run. We don't. We don't need to hit a home run. Yeah. We need to hit a we need to get a base hit. And then he was like, "Well, Angela, you know that like batting 300 is huge and you're a superstar." And I'm like, "I don't even know what you're talking about." And he's like, "Well, basically batting 300 means you get on base 3 times out of 10." He's like, "You're a superhero if you can get on base 3 times out of 10 times at bat." I'm like, "Seriously?" He's like, "Totally." So then I was like, "Okay, well, that doesn't work as a metaphor." So then now I'm like, "Okay, if you could just make it to the dugout, take a little nap there, then you're on your way." So that's my thought for the week is, you know, just don't worry about the home runs because, okay, here was the other part of the blog. But you've watched the movie Moneyball.
Yes.
Okay. So when he changed basically Jonah Hill's character, apparently Jonah Hill's character is a fictional character, but it's based on this real life guy. But he didn't want his name to be used, so they changed a lot of things about it. But basically that guy, what's his name? Hold on, I'll look it up. Anyway, they changed the way baseball is now the way they do it because they started going on the percentages and people that could just get on base instead of spending millions of dollars on the big hitters, right? I mean, everybody knows the story, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, well, that's perfect. That's the exact metaphor that I'm talking about. Anyway, turns out this guy that Jonah Hill's character was based on, he actually has been working for the Mets. Who are now going to the World Series. So people, my point is, base hits, play the percentages, don't worry about it.
Isn't it funny how like I always find it interesting to look at sports and what we consider achievement in sport, and it's not perfection. Like honestly, a good baseball average is exactly what, you know, Rob is talking about. We're talking 30%. You know, that's solid. Yet we look at our, whatever it is, our politicians, our doctors, our whoever they are, and we expect you to be perfect all the time. And yet with sports, we're willing to take 3 out of 10.
Right. And with ourselves. I mean, not everybody's like this, but chances are high, if you're listening to this podcast, you're one of the people that's like a total overachiever, trying to just figure it out, trying to do things better, and you're beating yourself up because you're not doing it perfectly. Odds are. Yeah. His name is Paul DePosta, DePodesta is the real guy. So one day at a time this week, do the equivalent of that healthy get on base. Just one thing on one day. That's what I said.
So that's this one, the out of the park one?
Yeah, that's the out of the park. Okay, okay. Yeah.
I hadn't had a chance to really go through the whole thing. I just kind of looked at it.
And you can subscribe to my blog and get the email delivered into your inbox every Sunday if you want to read this one. It's in there.
You know,
out of the park is what I called it.
When I was talking to Brian last night, we kind of touched on this idea of this feeling like you need to be constantly evolving, getting better, blah, 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 you know, and it really is kind of a pressure where it's like, you know, I'm not allowed to just be stagnant for a while. I'm not, you know, I always have to be, and it happens. I think a lot of it ends up being, it's hard when we have friends and family and they're maybe doing something that we're not. They look at you and they say, "Why don't you do this?" You know, and then there's these pressures where we feel like we have to be making these great strides. And as you know, talking about evolution, that word that we've said a lot, you know, we're only here for a short period of time, you know, on Earth. It's just this tiniest little blip in things, and yet we've put so much on how old we are and what we're supposed to be doing at a certain age. And it's like we no longer can just exist where we are at the moment. You know, it becomes so difficult when there's this constant drive and push to achieve things in certain amounts of times, whether, whether it's achieving enlightenment or achieving money or achieving stuff, you know, what, like, you know, even like you were kind of talking about, you're hinting on the idea that like a spiritual journey means that I'm constantly spiritually growing. Well, that's just not realistic. You know, growth, this is the thing that I kind of shared with Brian, with my recovery, and I'm not talking about from addiction, I'm just talking about improving myself.
Right.
Becoming a better person. I had to learn some tools. Mm-hmm. What I said last night is you chop wood and carry water. And then you go out and, you know, you practice it in the real world, mm-hmm. and you apply it. And then you go back and you do a little more work.
Yeah.
And then when you've achieved that, what do? Well, you go back and you do some more work. And that's just the way it is. But there are periods of actually putting it to use. Like I was sharing with my men's group last night about there are certain things that have finally become intuitive to me. Now, sharing this, I was talking to Sharon about this, about we did a little drive on Saturday, and we were just talking about our relationship, about how, you know, we really do well with each other. We share a household very well. We've had a couple of blowout fights. The greatest thing is neither one of us actually can remember what it was about because we left it.
Right.
We just said, you know, we let it go. And I was really happy to hear that because I'm not keeping score. She's not keeping score. And we started talking about some moments that were amazing and where we listened to each other. We tried to be of service to the other. We were patient. We were kind and we worked together and got into action and got through it. And it was, I've been working on myself in a new way for almost a decade. And it's only been within the last 2 years that some things have become intuitive.
Right.
Where they're automatic. So that means, and talk about baseball analogy, that means, so realistically, it was 8 years ago that things changed in my life, 8.5 years ago.
Right.
So of those 8 years, there's only been really 2 years probably where I've really felt, the last 2 years is where I feel like I've hit my stride. Things are intuitive. That means I was screwing up and working on stuff for six.
Yeah.
Was
and wait till we get to 15 and 20. We're going to say the same thing about now.
Yeah, because I'll probably regress a little bit.
Or you're just going to be like at a whole different level.
Maybe. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. I hope so. I hope it keeps getting easier because that's what I want.
I went back and looked at the blog that I wrote at my 8-year sobriety. So 4 years ago, I went back and looked at that blog. It's so different now. Not better. Not like, oh my God, whatever. Yeah. But it's just different. Like there's more of an ingrained peace. It's just from practicing.
So I have a question for you, because you brought up a lot of this idea of growth and, you know, other people that are in this same kind of, what we do. We're talking about health and wellness and this and that. So you're inundated with materials.
Totally.
You got books, you've got articles, blogs, this. You know, all of it's saying the same thing, you know, or
similar
things. We're all trying to grow. We're trying to, how much of that is making you feel like you have to keep growing?
Oh yeah. Well, totally. That's part of the thing that's different between me at year 12 and me at year 8 is I've gotten to a point now, most of the time, certainly not all the time, because I still get that kind of thing where I'm like, oh my God. But I've now gotten to a point where I am like, okay, some days I'm going to grow, some days I'm not. And the big piece for me on the days that I'm not, the big piece, and I feel like this is growing, even though it's not actively like working on something. The big piece for me is I feel like it's a huge healing act to my whole cellular self on the days that I don't feel like showing up and I just cut myself a break for not showing up. Like, I feel like for me, that is a really, really big deal. I feel like just being like, you know what? You're doing great. Have another show. I'm serious. Yeah. Because the more that, because you know what? And you know this line. This is with our program. It's not a program of self-improvement. It's a program of a self-acceptance. I think honoring that some days are going to be bigger days of growth than other days is okay. And it's just, I mean, I love the workout analogy with this, where we talk about like, if you're training for let's say you're training for a marathon, okay? And you want to do, let's say you're a marathon runner and you actually are training, not training to finish a marathon, but you're training to improve your marathon time, right? You're not going to go for a long run every day. You're not going to go for a run every day. You're going to go for high quality runs lots of days, and then your time's going to get faster. But if you run long every day, you're going to get hurt and you're not going to improve your time. So it's the same idea. Like we don't have to go for long, intense days. We don't have to go for major training days. We have rest days. It's the same thing with this. And I get inundated with this stuff because then I'm constantly reminded, and half the stuff that I read, like I get several emails every morning, half of the stuff I read is stuff saying, you're doing great right where you are. I swear to God. Yeah. Like I get Martha Beck's blog. Half of her stuff is like saying, you're doing great right where it is. Give yourself another reward for getting out of bed this morning. Give yourself a treat. Like literally, I love this woman.
Yeah.
I'm hearing people like, just be in the day. That's the people I subscribe to. I have very few health, like technical health, physical things coming at me because I don't need more of that. I mean, I'm not saying I know everything. There's always more to learn. Absolutely. Yeah. But what I need with this brain and it's working is people saying you're doing enough.
Yeah.
You're doing enough.
Those health and, you know, it's a great point. Like I do follow a couple more fitness related, people on Twitter and stuff. And unfortunately you get a lot of this. Did you go to the gym today? Yeah. I did. You suck.
Yeah.
You know, that kind
and
of stuff.
I don't like that.
Not,
I don't believe
yeah,
in it.
It's not that harsh, but it's that same basic sentiment is like, hey, the winners went today.
Yeah. I mean,
and
really?
After a while I'm like, you know, I don't, that's just kind of lame.
It's totally lame. I'm so against that. And I'm a personal trainer. I mean, but I am a very different personal trainer. You know, I was talking to this amazing, I think I talked about this in a podcast before, this amazing yogi after this, we did this like really hardcore yoga workshop and it was at night. It was a Friday night and we were walking out afterwards together and I was tired. So I chose within the yoga practice to do easier options than what I'm capable of doing. Not because I didn't have the energy to do them, but because I knew that if I went for it, I was tapping into energy that I was going to go too low into deficit. Like I'm slowly but surely learning how not to tap into that because I can do it. I can feel it. I'm getting much better and more aware of it, but I can feel it when I'm getting to that point where it's like, I'm getting tired. Okay, dig in and find another gear. And I choose, I when I notice that now, 8 times out of 10, I go, nope, going the other way. I'm not going to dig in and find another gear. I'm going to stay here and conserve so I do not go to empty, because I don't want to go to empty anymore. So anyway, that's what I made those decisions during that class. I felt really good about it. And as I was walking out, I just said, you know, wow, I'm still really tired, even though I made those decisions. And she goes, I know, me too. And I was like, really? She's like, Angela, my biggest days of growth within my yoga practice are the days that I choose not to go to my deepest poses. They're the days where I honor that I'm tired and I do less. That's where I think the spiritual fitness is getting into, you know, your higher echelons, like when you can be like, okay, enough.
I just came up with an analogy, and then, boy, that's a nice combo, an analogy. Life is not a racetrack where we go and repeat the track and know what's coming next. Life is a race down a track where we're only going down it the first time.
Right.
So we don't know, and I'm just using the mountain bike kind of a metaphor, is we don't know when the next valley is going to come, when the next climb is going to come. We don't know when the next, you know, nice long descent is going to happen. So we have to be prepared for everything at all times. And if we are pushing ourselves, it's not like we know, like, hey, I can jam it right now because I know for the next 4 years, I've got easy street or the next 4 miles.
Right.
We don't have that. We don't have that like, hey, I don't have to do a gnarly climb until tomorrow. We don't know when the gnarly climb is going to come.
Right.
So in reality, we should always be, you know, holding a little back in reserve, you know, keeping in that gear that's, hey, this feels good. Let's stick with this a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's feel comfortable here. You know, it's kind of interesting. It's a good point, you know, because it... Every time that I do, you know, go too hard, too many days in a row, I don't know what the next day is going to be where I need that extra.
Right.
You know, I might need that extra. And you know what's unfortunately what happens a lot in those times? And this is kind of a weird thing because it's a physical, I can push myself physically. And I'm not just talking about like, you know, as in muscles. I'm also talking about physical stress, strain, sleep, that kind of stuff.
Working long hours.
Yeah. And then the next day something happens, you know, who knows what it could be. A friend gets hurt. You hear some bad news, whatever it is. And what ends up happening? I end up acting out emotionally.
Totally.
And that actually feels worse.
Like, totally.
What feels worse than physical pain is when I've hurt somebody emotionally or said something with my words. I'll take a broken arm for 6 weeks sometimes than really hurting somebody,
right,
making them feel like crap. Because why? Because I couldn't take one more little thing because I pushed myself too hard.
Right. But on the flip side, you're going to probably still do that.
Like, to an extent.
Totally.
Yeah.
I mean, I still push myself too hard physically sometimes, and I still do that. But I'm getting better because it's just a whole thing about practice. I mean, yeah, I think the whole spiritual acceptance of this is who I am, this is how I operate, I'm working on it, doing the best I can. Oh, whoop. I mean, it's just like my food sponsor said for me for so many years, like, better luck next meal.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
I mean, totally. Better luck next day. I mean, yeah, it's
tomorrow's
just
a new day.
Exactly. I mean, and going in deeper, like if you're depressed, if you have, you know, major anxiety about something, if you have disappointment about something, if you have some major emotion, like just go in deeper if you can and just see. I mean, do we want people that can't leave the house for 2 weeks? No. I mean, I'm not suggesting that kind of a dangerous place, but being able to acknowledge that you're feeling what you're feeling and being in it will help you allow it to pass, because apparently that's part of being a human being. Like, we have moments where we are too tired.
Yeah.
We have moments
where we don't want to get up out of bed.
Where we have moments where we're depressed, where we're sad, where we're angry, where we're disappointed. You know, just being like, okay, I'm grateful. I mean, you can be grateful, but be okay being those things and see what the message is. Because I think those things oftentimes have a message. They have a message. Like, I'm super disappointed. That's a great message. Like, what do you really want? What do you need to do to set your trajectory so that you can start going towards what you really want? Disappointment is a great tool.
Well, and being able to, one of the hardest things to do and the greatest things that I'm grateful for learning is to just be honest and express that.
Yeah.
Just say, you know what, I'm disappointed today.
Yeah.
I had something happen and I'm just kind of sad. It has nothing to do with you.
You know,
I go to a rehearsal one night and everyone looks at me like, are you okay? It's like, you know, I'm just, you know, you're right. I should have let you know when I walked in, like, hey, I'm excited to be here, but I'm a little disappointed today and I'm just going to be in it for a while.
Yeah.
And you know, I'll get over it.
Yeah.
And usually hanging out with my friends, playing some music, I'm over it.
Right.
You know, but to be actually aware of it, to communicate it, to be open about it, to let, you know, people know I used to not do that. I used to not do that.
I
hold it all in.
I know. Because you're supposed to have it all figured out, or you don't want to let everybody else be down or whatever. But it's such a huge gift also to the, not only does it make it easier for people to kind of navigate around you.
Yeah, no kidding.
But it's a huge gift, because if someone like you, who's really up and positive all the time, comes in and says, oh my God, I'm really just disappointed, I just kind of have to be in it, you're like, oh
yeah,
wow, well, I feel disappointed too sometimes. Well, even this person that I really admire and respect and want to be like, that's always happy all the time, they're not happy all the time. Like, that kind of makes people feel better to me.
Yeah, it's like, it's not share the misery thing. It's sharing and communication.
It's like, oh, okay, I'm not the only one
who goes
through this. This is why I love that Mom Mastery blog. Because when she writes, I can relate. I don't have kids, and she writes about like her dealings with her kids, but I can relate because I'm like, oh my God, I'm not the only one that feels like this.
Yeah.
Wow, this is amazing. I couldn't be happier right now to just hear, not that I want anyone to be down or I want anyone to be having a hard time, but like, when someone can be honest, this is what's really happening with me.
Yeah.
There's a powerful, because we don't heal alone. So knowing that other people were all in this together, and that was, I'm glad you brought that up, because that was another really big point of that whole email. When I emailed her back, I was just like, you know what? Just getting out of bed, having a meal, sitting outside in the sunshine, watching some TV, going to bed because she's recovering from something. That's perfect. Couldn't be better. Perfect. You're showing up. to what you can do. Don't worry about it. You know, read a novel. read something trashy. Anyway.
Great.
Great podcast, Henno. It's so glad to be back in the studio.
I know. Nice to have you. So
you guys, thanks for listening.
Give us your all the details.
Oh my God. I can't wait. We really kind of touched on some things today. Woo. All right. More tips to be awesome next week. Just want you to know we really appreciate you guys listening. We're in our second year of podcasting.
Yay.
Yay for us.
Going to Angelus.com.
Going to Angelus.com. You can sign up for my blog, which gets delivered into your inbox on Sunday, so you have a little more inspiration. I'm on Twitter at Angelus Gym, although I hardly ever tweet, but I'm on there. And I'm on Facebook at Angelus Gym, and I am on that quite a bit. And Instagram, Angelus Gym. Yep. Angelus Gym. I put a couple cute little short videos of the classroom yesterday on there.
I love those, by the way.
I know that one of Maggie. She's on the belt. So you guys, check this out. She's on. I have this cool belt that it's like a little kid at the grocery store where, you know, there you see them on their leash.
Yeah,
anyway,
exactly.
I had to replace the belt. So this is a stiffer belt. And so she really couldn't move it very much, but she was just so, she's such a cute gal. She goes, "Are you going to post that?" And I go, "Yes." And she goes, "All right." I go, "Is that okay?" And she's like, "I'm going to untag myself if it's not cute." But it's so cute. So she hasn't untagged herself. So that's cool. So anyway.
Perfect.
Okay.
And I'm at Ida Henno on Twitter. And please go check out our networks, the Tangent Bound Network and the Wicked Radio Networks. There's lots of other great podcasts on there. And and just because our sister show, The Crazy Life, they talk about us so much. I feel like I have to throw the love back.
Throw the love back.
So I appreciate Brian and Jen for talking this up.
All right. Thank you to everybody. Bye.